Today's guest on Medio Scientific's The Business of Lorwen is someone who's built more than just a business. He's built a way of thinking about problems that cuts straight to the value layer. You might know him as the sprinkler nerd, or maybe you caught him on Shark Tank pitching the Helix EcoMower back in the day. But behind all that is a guy who's consistently focused on understanding systems, whether they're water, web, or wireless, and then connecting the dots between those systems and the people who need them most. Andy Humphreys started out in irrigation sales, moved into smart irrigation systems before IoT was even a buzzword, and then went full tilt into e-commerce. His sprinkler supply store became a seven-figure business, dominating a niche that most folks overlook. And now he's back to building, this time with Harmony Analytica, a company that blends LoRaWAN, water sensors, and real-world ROI. What's especially interesting about Andy is that he didn't come to LoRaWAN as a wireless engineer. He came in as a seasoned entrepreneur who knows how to sell. And he sees LoRaWAN not as an end in itself, but as a tool for creating clarity, whether that's showing a property manager when a pool isn't refilling or giving a CFO real-time insight into water usage they've been blind to for years. In this episode, we get into what Andy calls sensor as a service, the power of starting with one small install and expanding from there, and how to think about IoT from the customer's perspective, not the engineer's. He's got more than 500 sensors in the field, plenty of hard-won lessons from building his own soil moisture probe, and a refreshingly practical approach to solving problems. Let's dig in. Andy, thanks for coming on the show, man.
My pleasure, Nick. So glad to be here, man.
Yeah, I'm psyched to have you here. We first met, geez, a couple years ago with the Gristle King thing, so totally separate from Medio Scientific, and you came in as sprinkler nerd there. And now you're doing some LoRaWAN business stuff, but really I think of you as like a business crusher who just applies their focus to different niches. And I thought, because from the outside it looks like you really love some things that are maybe unexpected for a normal person, is we'd start with asking you, what do you love to do?
I would say that I love to play in the sandbox of life. Now, what does that mean? It means I like to play, tinker. And part of that is, I guess, first, understanding how things work enough so that you can connect dots looking forward. All right. So once you know how things work, then you can say, oh my gosh, this might affect said industry in such a way in 10 years. And you kind of have this aha vision. You can see it. You're like, gosh, I know what's going to happen. Now, we all think we know what's going to happen. So there's some percentage that it's not going to. But if you can see what might happen based on the tools that are available and what you've learned, then you can start playing in the sandbox and trying to create that vision that you have. And so to me, that's what I love to do. Have a vision and then go try to build it.
And that's what you're doing right now with Harmony Analytica, which is this, basically it's built around this soil moisture sensor. You've got the irrigation kind of sales background. And you've got a thing that I think is really interesting for a lot of folks in LoRaWAN, which is that you come to this from this kind of business first and lots of online sales experience. You've had these million-dollar, multi-million-dollar sales years on the Amazon side or on online side. So making the money is not super hard for you. At least that's how it appears from the outside. You never know what it's like on the inside. But putting everything together so that it's a unified experience is the thing that I think is really important on the LoRaWAN side. Talk to me about your idea of this sensor as a service, because I think you're going to crush with it.
Again, so this is a bit of a theory mixed with playing in the sandbox to experiment to see if the theory actually could be proven out. One theory would be sensor as a service. Now, what's interesting about that is the service would be a subscription, yet at the same time, we are also in this sort of subscription overload economy, where in some ways it's a barrier because users think, oh my God, another damn subscription. No, man, I don't know. I got to think about this. I really don't want another subscription. So I think there is a model for sensor as a service. I'm not 100% sure yet exactly what that service is. And so I think there is something to be said about deploying devices, making happy customers, and then based on the needs, wants, desires of that group of customers, then you could layer on the service part of it such that they're happy because you're building something that they want and they're already in versus having the subscription be a potential barrier to market. And so what I'm trying to do right now is get as many devices into the field and into the hands of customers as possible, because that's also where the learning happens.
Right. And I guess the natural question there is, what have you learned so far? And can you share a little bit about numbers, whether it's uplinks or sensors in the field or whatever it is? Give me some kind of dimensions of this.
Yeah, we have north of 500 sensors in the field. You know, majority of them are soil moisture sensors. Majority of them are sensors that I'm building, but we also have third-party devices in the field. We have quite a few weather stations in the field, different types of weather stations in the field, data loggers in the field that are primarily connected to water meters and pressure transducers. So when I look at in my industry, when I say my industry, this would be the irrigation, outdoor water consumption, and indoor water. Those would be the primary metrics. And as I think about my industry, where it's been, where it's going, I do feel like the next evolution is the collection of data from sites. So as it stands now, there's no data being collected from outdoor landscapes. The only data that might be collected would be weather that mostly isn't coming from a local weather station, it's just coming from a broadcast service. And then maybe some water consumption, but water consumption is probably only 5% of projects have a flow meter or a water meter dedicated to the irrigation system. Currently, pressure is not being monitored or reported at all on an irrigation system. And soil moisture, again, is probably less than 1% of all irrigation systems have a soil moisture sensor.
I would have thought there'd be way more penetration. It seems like it's super obvious that you need those things. But of course, I mean, I guess I'm a nerd, so it's like, yeah, that's the first move for me. But it sounds like in the land of irrigation, the first move is not being a nerd.
And there's something to be said about the technology that is required to make it possible, has been available, but not in a place that's affordable to the everyday person, company, service provider. But it's getting there. We're much closer now than ever before. So even if we went back 10 years ago, there really wasn't, well, maybe 10. Maybe LoRaWAN is 10 years old. Is that about right?
Yeah, 2009. So yeah.
Well, but in terms of like having devices that are...
Yeah, out there in the world, sure.
And the full stack, if you will, maybe 2015. So what we can do now wasn't possible before, unless you had big pockets and you were much more of an engineer, sophisticated user. So you immediately, the market was only going to be a 1% of 1% of 1% that would deploy it. But as things become more readily available and the technology evolves, now we can get it further down the funnel to more of the everyday person. And I think that's, as we go forward into the future, that'll move down market even more. So that, I think that's one of the reasons why none of this technology was really deployed into the irrigation, is because it was just too costly. There was really no ROI. It wasn't worth somebody's time, except for those few edge cases.
Right.
And now for $200, you can put a wireless pressure transducer on an irrigation system and monitor the pressure remotely. I mean, that's pretty amazing.
And I guess, I mean, I'm not an irrigation guy. What does that change for someone who's in that business? Like, why do I care about pressure? I'm assuming there's some really obvious things, but...
Well, every irrigation system has a preferred operating like performance spec. So a sprinkler is designed to operate at a certain pressure. And if the pressure, let's say, is much lower, your distribution uniformity is affected. So you're no longer applying an even amount of water. And you can use it for diagnostic purposes. And what's interesting about pressure is it's not constant. Like the city, if it's city water, there's a time in the day where the city has the highest pressure, and then it slowly goes down and down and down throughout the day, and then it ramps back up. And oftentimes, the city is very cyclical. Like every day, the pressure ramps up at the same time. And so one of the things that's interesting is, let's say an irrigation contractor is installing a system for the first time. They should take a pressure reading. I would say that, let's say half do not, which they should. But if they're there at the site and they take a pressure reading and it's 1 p.m., that might not actually be the pressure when the system is running at 4 in the morning. But there really hasn't been a good way for someone to say, let's put a pressure transducer on here. And let's just monitor it for a couple of days so we can get an idea for what the pressure looks like at this project. And we can document that. And then if there's ever an issue sometime in the future, we know what our, you know, sort of baseline metrics were when we first put this in.
Super smart. I mean, that's exactly the kind of thinking and investigation I expect from you. So well done. That's rad. I can totally see how that would be also a part of the sales pitch where you come in and you say, hey, you've never seen this information before. We're going to show this to you. And maybe that's something that you do for free. Maybe that's something you charge an initial consulting piece for. And in fact, this idea of IoT for CFOs came directly from you. You're the one who told me about that. Can you walk me through your sales pitch for, maybe we start with, like, how do you find new customers? Then we'll walk through the pitch.
Conversation. So certainly somebody could run a Google search and come across something and inquire, but there's also the, who do you know? Who's in your network? Who can you talk to about opportunities that they've never thought of before? And then they start looking at their clients and so on. And so I think that word of mouth, but just your network and sort of talking about opportunities that are now available that maybe weren't available before and trying to expose problems, really. Like, this technology is no good unless it's providing some inherent benefit, which could be or should be solving someone's problem or pain point so that they have an ROI on the investment. And that could be to save energy costs, or it could be to fix problems in systems, you know, find leaks that were not surfacing before, because sometimes you see a leak if it's going to drain.
Okay. So it's the relationship piece. And we were talking a little bit about this idea of a lot of the technology that we're using in LoRaWAN is open. It's not like LoRaWAN is my secret and I'm not sharing with anyone. It's everybody kind of understands it. I think your secret sauce is you're A, willing to work as hard or harder than anyone, and B, you've got this ability to put all of these ideas together and actually execute on it. And those two things are very simple, but I think the saying is, this shit ain't complicated. It's just hard. And you're good at this hard stuff.
It's not complicated. And it reminds me, if I were trying to find something parallel to use as a parallel example, I might use the internet as a parallel example, meaning, let's say, a website. So in 1998, or you could probably even say 2002 and earlier, building a website was very difficult.
Yeah.
Not for someone who was skilled or schooled in that, but for the everyday person, it was difficult. And then as it evolved, it became easier and easier and easier for someone to stand up a content website, an e-commerce website. And that, I feel like, is very similar to what we're seeing with the IoT industry. Is you don't have to be an IoT engineer anymore. There are tools and sort of built for you, done for you solutions that you can put together to build a tech stack that works for you. You know, and my tech stack might be different than someone else's tech stack, but finding the tools that are available, putting them together in a unique way sort of is the differentiator, beyond sort of saying, I've got something that's patented, proprietary, yada, yada. I'm not so sure that that's really the case anymore.
No.
It's putting together the tech stack, finding a vertical and applying it.
Yep. Very straightforward stuff. Requires a little bit of imagination, but nothing beyond what the normal person can do. And you're certainly exceptionally good at this. Okay. So the way you're finding new customers is through relationships. You're a total hustler. I see you going to the conferences. I see you coming back. I listen to your podcast and you're talking about, you know, hey, shout out to Billy and Jimmy and Tommy and Sammy. Like, you're really good about making sure all of those relationships are out there. When you meet a customer and you're going in, I thought this is one of the coolest things that you've described to me in our past conversations, is you'll start with just one thing. Can you walk me through, in general, without giving away your secret sauce, although I don't think it matters because I don't think anyone's going to work as hard as you, what that pitch looks like when you're first talking to a potential customer?
It is interesting, because if we're not careful, and this is probably just business sort of business sales 101, is if you throw a bunch of stuff out there, we might know exactly what we're talking about, but the customer then is just full of confusion.
Yeah.
If you say, here's what we can do, and there's 10 things, you're like, okay. So to me, it's really about trying to understand the customer. Where are they? What problem can they solve? And if it's not soil moisture sensor, then I might not mention that, because maybe it's water consumption that matters more to them. So you try to focus in on one aspect. And if you can, like, to use a silly analogy, like, land and expand, land with one thing and then start going sideways and introducing like another technology and another type of a sensor, I feel like is a better approach than throwing everything out there and then expecting the customer to pick one.
Yeah. Hoping they decide for themselves all the stuff that you know. Okay. Yeah.
And here would be a good example using soil moisture sensor as a starter. So I don't think he would care if I mentioned his name. His name's Isaac Carter, Carter Irrigation Solutions in Florida. And he started using some soil moisture sensors. And then he, you know, once you have a relationship with someone, you really, to me, I want to be their problem solver. If you have a problem on the site, just come to me and we'll see what we can do to figure this out. Well, one of his customers has a swimming pool. Of course, it's Florida. They have a swimming pool and they were having trouble with the company who maintains the swimming pool with the level control, like the automatic fill swimming pool.
Okay.
The pool service company said everything is fine, but the homeowner is saying, I really don't think this thing is running. It's not working. You know, and I said, all right, Isaac, let's just put a water meter on here with a data logger and we can create some charts and really see what's going on here. So we did that and I started watching it immediately because it's interesting to me and I want to make sure that technology is working correctly. And we're not registering any water. There's no water. A couple days go by, a week goes by, 2 weeks go by, and I'm like, you know, there's got to be evaporation. Like this swimming pool should be filling and there was no water usage. And then I started to get worried because I'm thinking, okay, maybe my technology is not working here.
Yeah.
Maybe there's something stuck in the water meter and it's just not reporting. So Isaac went out there. I said, just turn the thing on manually. Turns it on. Okay. We get some water usage. It's not the IoT sensor.
Right.
So now they had real data. The homeowner had actual data that they could go to their swimming pool service provider and say, hey, we started recording the consumption and there's no water coming through the fill. Then the company came out and they realized that the level of the fill was not accurate, you know, because a pool fill is basically just a toilet float. They had to adjust the toilet float so that it would fill automatically. And it was very hard for the homeowner to say to the service provider, there's something wrong, because a lot of times service providers don't trust homeowners.
Yeah, it's like being on the phone with AT&T. They don't think you know what you're doing. Yeah.
They put in the water meter, we tracked it online, and they were able to solve that problem. And the other part I'll layer on here is this house was three houses away from another house that has some soil moisture sensors. And Wi-Fi to our little IoT gateway wasn't good at this house. But come to find out, the LoRaWAN sensor we were using was able to pick up the gateway, you know, at the house three houses away. So it was just a great, great mix of technology on this project.
Nice. And so you'll start with one sensor, you'll expand that out to more if that's appropriate. And then walk me through this IoT for CFOs idea, because I think it's such a neat way to think about the world. And especially as we enable more and more people with all the technology out there, from AI to dashboards to just making anything that you can articulate possible. How do you think about this IoT for CFOs thing?
Yeah, so I will say this is a theory. So let's just say there's a 50% chance that it's a good theory and there's a 50% chance that it's not a good theory.
Sure.
Theory is that historically, you know, CFOs look at profit and losses and they look at budgets. And oftentimes, let's just take the use case of water. You know, there's been a water bill that's been paid every month for years and years and years. And it's just a line item and it probably gets signed off. And, you know, there's going to be some projects, some companies, a facilities manager. So the CFO might go to the facilities manager and they may or may not have an explanation for what the water bill is. But beyond that, there isn't much data that a CFO can look at to explain the line item for water. And oftentimes on buildings, indoors and outdoors, there's one water meter that goes into a building. And then after that, nobody really knows where it goes, per se.
Right. Like you use 600,000 gallons, figure it out.
Yeah. And so if they wanted to reduce it, they don't necessarily know if they can, because they don't really know where it's going. And things are getting better. But also historically, there was just one read at the end of the month that says, here's what you used at the end of the month. So they don't know if it was all the water was used on one day because there was a ginormous leak.
Right.
Because they don't have the visibility into the timeliness of the data. So you know, daily consumption is better than weekly, which is better than monthly. But the closer you can get to the sample period, the more you can find anomalies. So if a building is, let's just say, for instance, they're running 60 gallons a minute all throughout the building, but all of a sudden they're running 150 gallons for a couple hours, then you can start to ask questions. Why? Why did our consumption spike during this period? Or maybe it spikes during this period every Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Okay, what could be going on here? And you can try to look for patterns. And I guess I'll add that into the conversation here is that I'm really finding that the data is more useful when looking at it over time than it is any single one point in time. So it's almost like looking at the trends and finding that pattern recognition that has value, but not what is the soil moisture right now isn't as powerful as let's look at what it is now compared to the last 7 days. So you kind of need something to compare it against.
Oh, that's rad. And you're bringing that to people who are naturally number nerds with CFOs and saying, let me just basically pull the curtain back from what's happening in your business. You can make whatever decision you want, like it's your business. I will just enable you to remove that blocking layer from the data because the data exists whether you track it or not.
Right, right. So maybe the facilities manager's job is to make sure the facility is working, like everything's connected, plumbed, so that the data can be delivered to the CFO.
Yep.
But the CFO, and it may not be him or her, it could be their team, it could be data analysts, whatever that might look like, could look at it and decide what to do with it and then send back that information to the facilities manager, say, hey, here's what I think we could do.
Yeah. Super cool. Dig it, dude. And then you've recently developed this soil moisture sensor on your own that's kind of this complete package piece. You put a whole podcast out there on how you did it, going into, I would say, pretty decent detail so that anyone could more or less replicate what you did, which I thought was super cool of you. Was there any lessons learned there if you're going to compress all that into someone building a business in Lorwyn as we wrap this thing up where you're like, hey, this is what I learned and this is really what I would recommend you do if you're thinking about building a business connected to or reliant on Lorwyn and sensors?
I do think that it has a lot to do with the who. Who is the customer? And you could take something simple like a temperature and humidity sensor, let's say. And you could take the same board inside the product and it's measuring temperature and humidity. You know, that's a commodity, right? A LoRaWAN temperature and humidity sensor, for all intents and purposes, is a commodity. However, if you think about the who is using it, why do they want to use it? And then you can design with that in mind. Maybe it needs to be waterproof. Maybe it needs to be 1 inch by 1 inch. Maybe it needs to be installed in the full sun and it needs, you know, ventilation. You know, what is the application and who's going to use it? And then you can start to get creative with designing it so that it meets their needs. And maybe it becomes a $200 temperature and humidity sensor, yet you can buy over-the-counter LoRaWAN temperature and humidity sensor for probably less than $5, like just the board. Like,
right.
They're not expensive, but then when you figure out what the use case is and who needs it, then you can design it for them.
Got it. So the total, like, customizing as a value add.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that that's a lot like the internet, meaning a website is just a website, but you got to think with the user in mind, what do they want to achieve from it? And, you know, soil moisture sensor is a great example because the use case that I'm building for is primarily high value landscape assets. And it's not every yard, every home in America, because that ends up becoming much of a commodity.
Yep.
But it's also turf grass is a big use, you know, big market. And so the sensor that I designed is fully electrically potted, sealed. You could throw it in a pond and then pull it out 2 weeks later and it's still going to work. You can't replace the batteries, but that's by intent because it needs to be installed in really harsh environments where you have to make sure it's not going to have any water intrusion.
Dang. So yeah, throw it in a pond that's a pretty good sales pitch. It's like, yeah, you could drop this in a pond, come back in 2 weeks, it'll still work. Just stick in the ground. So we got you.
Yeah. And if you can get 3 to 5 years out of a battery or out of a sensor and it's affordable, to me that outweighs expensive you know, but something that you can own longer, you know, so that's, I guess, the side that I fall on. It's part of the problem is making something affordable, right? That's part of the problem I'm trying to solve is make it affordable.
Yeah. And you're very practical. I think this is maybe the last takeaway piece is in a business sense. And I've got another partner like this who's very practical as well in another business. And you got to be careful what you're optimizing for. And I think you know what you're very good at figuring out what to optimize for. Like I'll optimize for some nerdy technical thing. And you're like, no. It's what the customer wants. That's all that matters. And you're serving the customer. You're not serving your own kind of technological wishes. That might be the fun part to start playing around with. But at the end of the day, you're delivering something to the customer. They're giving you value in return. Like what they want is what matters.
Absolutely. And there is something to be said about customers sometimes don't know what they want.
Sure.
Right? You don't know. But if you can try your best to get into the shoes of the customer and you might be able to show them what they want and what they need. If you can be your own customer, you don't necessarily have to ask them what features do you want because they might not know. But if you know what it's like to be them, you can design for that. Kind of like a few steps ahead of them, per se.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. I love it how like getting into their shoes and being the customer before the customer is a customer. Super smart.
Yeah. And again, I think that all of this technology is best applied to verticals. And so if anybody's listening to this, it's like they need to think about LoRaWAN and IoT through their vertical and then design for their vertical.
Dig it. Andy, thanks so much for making the time today. Super cool to get to pick your brain a little bit. It's always worth it for me to get on the phone or listen to you and listen to what you're saying because such a great way to look at the world through a business lens. Thank you, man.
Yeah, man. Thanks so much.
That's it for this episode of The Business of LoRaWAN. I built this for you, the one person in about 100,000 who actually has an interest in how this tiny little slice of the world works. Of course, this isn't just about you and me, it's about everyone in LoRaWAN and how we can work together to make an exceptional thing. LoRaWAN is a dispersed community with little pockets of knowledge all around the world, and most of them don't talk to each other as much as I'd like, so the first and best thing we can do to make this show better is to get more guests on who I don't even know exist. I want to talk to strangers. Strangers who are your friends. Please introduce me to the most rad LoRaWANer you know, or point them my way, or hell, reach out and give me a name. When it comes to running down LoRaWAN guests, I can track a falcon on a cloudy day. If you can remember metsci.show, you can find me. That's metsci.show. Metsci.show. Okay, so sharing knowledge by getting great guests on is the first and by far the most important thing we can do to make this better. The next best thing for the show to do is the usual stuff. Subscribe to the show, give it a review, share it in your corner of the world. Again, that's metsci.show. Finally, if you want to support the show financially, you can do that over at support.metsci.show. You'll see options there for one-time donations if you really like this show, as well as an ongoing subscription option if you think this show is worth supporting for the long term. If you want to try LoRaWAN for yourself, sign up for a Medio Scientific account at console.medioscientific.com and get your first 400 data credits for free. That's enough to run a sensor for about a year if you're firing every hour. The show is supported by a grant from the Helium Foundation and produced by Gristle King, Inc. I'm Nick Hawks. I'll see you on the next show.